Yo, what's good? This is Bougie Reviews, episode 4.
Episode 4.
Not Bougie Reviews. Nah, this is a Bougie Podcast, God episode damn. 4.
We still don't have a name, so it really doesn't matter.
Yeah. I mean, by episode 10, we're not going to have a name, and it'll be a Bougie Podcast.
Unless y'all give us names. Like, God damn. Send some names.
Anyway, we're here. We got homies in the room. Got my homie Tosh.
Boz in the building.
Boz in the building. So in case you hear like two voices that don't sound familiar, right? No, it's not us. It's
Julius, where the fuck are you?
Where this is how we resort to sending messages to Julius,
right? Like, shit.
On the podcast. Anyway, we're here. We finally saw a movie together that we can discuss on the podcast, which is like this shit may be 2 hours long this time. I don't know. But first things first, like Adam, what's been good? It's been like, I don't know, a week and a half or some shit since episode 3. Really don't chill like that unless we're about to record.
You know what I mean? And it's funny too, because I was like telling Tosh, I was like, yo, I haven't seen like niggas since I've been back. I was like, I only see Jordan really, but that's because we're always doing some shit. Like we're always, you know, recording or whatever. But booked me a little gig and shit.
Got some sauce.
Like,
it's too much sauce.
It's a small role, but we'll throw some jelly on that shit.
Yeah, you know? It's a small roll in a big oven.
Yeah,
I guess you could say.
I guess that's true. I mean, not to be too informative, but shout out Netflix for hiring a kid. You know what I mean? But
damn, Netflix money.
A little chunk of something. A little they tossing me scraps, but I mean, I'm
crumb
eating,
off
like,
of the Netflix table sounds fucking beautiful.
Yo, right, shout now out to Netflix also for their no bullshit policy, because I don't know, man, it's a witch hunt out there, and Kevin Spacey got caught up. Bro. And I heard you guys pulled House of Cards, bullshit.
Since
so
episode 3, there's been like 5 like actors/filmmakers get accused of mad sexual harassment.
Yo, it's crazy. Like, yo, it's a witch hunt. I mean, it's the best witch hunt in Hollywood yet. Like,
I was talking about this though with one of my coworkers, and she was like, this right now the pendulum is swinging, is like in a forward swing right now, but then eventually the pendulum is going to swing all the way back, and then what does that look like? And you know, and how are we like, all right, how are we letting go and firing these people in a way that ensures the problem doesn't continue to happen?
I don't know,
because people are like, accusations are coming out, and people are getting like dropped and let go with no sorts of investigations being done. You know what I mean? It's like, it's a very like,
you think it'll, you think
Twitter
it'll
dominated
consume other people that are innocent?
I think in a lot of, not that are innocent, but I think in a lot of ways we're presented in information that's in a very black and white sense, and in a way that we're not really trying to get to know
what the situation is. We're just kind of quick to accuse and destroy.
Yo, I was on this website that straight up just had a list of people accused of sexual harassment, and it was like, one of them was like, I forgot what website this was, but it's like, it's reputable enough, you would go there. And one was like, Neil deGrasse Tyson.
Damn,
rape.
What the fuck?
Rape. And I'm like, okay, like, this is like, it's not an issue that you kind of just like do colon rape. That's it. We're moving
right,
down.
We need,
next on the list,
Neil deGrasse
Tyson. Yeah, like I'm like, wait a second, Neil deGrasse Tyson rape. Like, I can't even click on a word to see an article about what's going on. Like, it's just so dangerous. Like, and I think that it's short sighted at the end of the day, because I don't see, like, yes, we're getting rid of each person that's, you know, being accused of doing things that are disgusting. Like, but are we doing it in a way that it ensures that this doesn't happen going forward, other than
it's
people
outside,
just being
right
scared?
It can't
to,
just
you know,
be like, oh, he got caught. Like,
how did this problem happen? Yeah, you know
right,
what I mean?
Like, are
how
we getting to the root
happen
of things?
Because it sounds pretty systemic.
Yeah, it seems like it's everywhere.
Yeah.
You know? But it's interesting. It's sort of been a hush-hush sort of thing for people that know of the industry or in the industry. But I think that like the fact that it's going like wildfire is sort of testament to the fact that, yo, everybody knows. Like, it's not like we're saying like the restaurant biz, everyone in the restaurant biz is a child molester. That I think would take some time for people to start believing. But yo, you say everyone in Hollywood's a child molester or some shit, everybody's like, no surprise, like, yeah, burn them.
Oh, like, we are depraved. But like, I don't know, because first of all, the Kevin Spacey shit, that was wild, because that kid said he was, what, like 14
at the time.
And then it's like, all right, like, like, all right, now another some questions about Hollywood and how did we get here? Why is a 14-year-old at an adult party?
That's true.
You know what I mean? But with that's how. But that's like, Hollywood, see, there are questions here that we're not addressing in this whole.
But was
like,
it a performer or it was just a random?
He was a performer.
See,
but even still, you know what I mean? Like Drew Barrymore was like 10 at Hollywood parties doing blow and shit like that. Like, why is that happening?
Whoa, fact check.
Yo, she's mentioned this.
What about the drugs?
That started when I was about 10 and 11, and
10. It, mention this.
Okay. Doing fact, blow at 10. Fact check.
Drew Barrymore blow.
Drew Barrymore. I think cocaine. You might get something else.
No, nah, she's had Drew Barrymore. Yeah. Drew Barrymore cocaine. She's had like
my childhood battle with drug and alcohol addiction.
No, she's wrote about it.
That's the first thing that comes
up. Time out, bro. I need a number. Like
that's two facts over here, though. Two fact checkers are coming up with the same thing, bro.
10 years old.
2016, 2015.
Childhood.
Shit.
Yo, Hollywood started. You know, Hollywood started with like. Giving young actresses uppers and downers and shit to get them to perform, like,
I mean,
to desired results, you know what I mean?
Because like, you come, I mean, that's coming directly out of like circus and like, you know, like traveling showman sort of behavior. Like, you know, there was no like.
Quick cut in for the fact check. I do not see where what age exactly.
Okay. I see. There's an interview of 15-year-old.
She was checked into a institution. For the drug issues, mm-hmm. so means they were bad enough by
prior.
10.
Yeah, exactly.
She had
yeah.
been bad on the yo was, because at 10 she was at a party. She probably did coke. Maybe it was
yo. How
her
you
first
do
time.
Coke at 10? Just like
yo, the crazy
what?
Thing is that there's an interview here for her at the age of 15, meaning that she was mature enough to sit down and invest and be like, yeah, I'm gonna let you know what life's about.
Yo, shit, and you know, and this is not about blowing up Drew Barrymore. Like, thank you, Drew Barrymore, for being someone early on that highlighted like, yo, there is an issue here, like in this industry. And, like, now, like, we're highlighting other issues, but they're all the same at the end of the day. Like, this, all these sexual harassment allegations and violations are, come from the same area that shit, like, having a 10-year-old at a party doing cocaine
of
comes
course.
From, you know
Yo,
what
I mean? They're all
like, why
definitely
is that
14-year-old linked.
At an adult party with
That's
Kevin
true.
Spacey?
That's true.
And Kevin Spacey, why are you not being kosher? You know what I mean? In a situation like that, like...
I mean, yo, he said he apologized and like if he doesn't remember, so if
he said
there
it must
was
have been 30, he basically said, sounds like me, I'm gay,
right?
Basically,
right? Like, oops. Yeah. By the way, I like men. Yeah. Like, you know, what I mean?
deflect, which is a horrible way to
right, like, handle it. Yo, but some people do that, you know? And I was just talking about this, like another guy in Hollywood that. Caught a lot of flack for like child porn and all that weird stuff. I think his deflect was like sickness. Like homeboy popped out and said he's sick, not to drop any names, but like I think that was a way of like, you know.
I mean, they all say they're sick.
No.
Like Harvey Weinstein went to
oh, yeah. Well, I guess.
You know, to a certain extent it's always like I need help. But I mean, what, like 2 episodes ago or like in the second or first episode, we talked about Woody Allen and how much of a disgrace that is. I think actually that was last, might have been last episode.
I mean, it, yeah.
And how
it
he's
been
still,
three.
You know, his newest
he's still viable.
Film came out a month ago.
And about, no, was, no, nah, that one doesn't have like some weird.
No, but his next film apparently is going to be.
About.
Basically
the,
his
yeah,
autobiography.
His story
like,
about how he.
About a dude in love with his stepchild.
Yo, that's crazy.
Like that.
That's
yeah.
crazy.
And I don't know, like, it's, what are we, like,
what are we condoning?
To what like, ends are we doing this, you know, these mass allegations and stuff like that? Like, how are we making sure that this won't happen again? Not just, like, you know, getting people out to paint and mass. Of course, that's going to have an effect.
Right.
But, you know, there's certain, there's
we
kind of a rebuild
power.
Period.
Yeah,
there's
we
a
want
lot,
some,
like,
yeah.
you have the opportunity to create definitely a different type of industry
That's
after
true.
All this shit. You're getting a lot of people in charge out the paint. So I feel like,
I was going to say, yo, you were saying, like,
right.
going forward, yeah, I think it's gonna there's going to be, like, young performers and filmmakers like ourselves in the industry. Mm-hmm. Like, at that point, we'll be there being able to at least have an inside look at shit, like yeah. you know what I
and
mean?
I think this
like,
can I think this definitely goes to show you more than anything that you cannot have one type of person dominate an entire industry.
That's true,
you know
yeah.
what I mean, like that, because that's how things get like tight-lipped and you have to go along with certain kinds of people
to
stay afloat because
yo,
they have
so,
all
so,
the power you
so
know what
support
I'm saying?
The outside rim of you know this industry, like yo, support the little guys, like not because you know, I don't know. Like, you gotta, like, they have to get to bring you better work and what you want to see. Yo, they need support. Like, if you keep paying the same big guys because they have all the greatest shit, like, you know what I mean? You'll never have a change in the industry. But, like, yo, if you support more local or more, like, you know, community-based art, like, it grows, it develops, like, it becomes bigger. And then that way, like, yo, you have a greater platform and a greater influence as a community member, you know what I mean? As, like, the people. And, you know, the artists that you support, yo, are sort of forced to listen to what you're saying. And then, you know, things get addressed, you know? Problems get solved, shit like that, you know.
Anyway, it was a long segue into thanking Netflix for
getting
rid of House of Cards because Adam got some Netflix money. Not gonna tell you off of in what area.
I got a little bit part in Orange is the New Black. Hey. I got a scene for that shit, so that's cool. Whoever is listening to this sort of knows that.
Yes. by the way, Netflix, no one at Netflix has been accused of sexual harassment. Harassment or allegations. So they're doing something right.
Right, exactly. Yeah, shout out to them.
Nothing's come out yet.
So
I'm not saying nothing happened, but.
I mean, look, I'm not speaking on it. Whatever.
We're done. We're probably going to cut that. Anyway. Yeah, I'm dead. So we got the SoundCloud up page running. It's a bougie podcast on SoundCloud. Go follow that. And iTunes is the next step, but like I thought that I would just be able to go onto the podcast place in iTunes and upload a podcast. Apparently that's like not enough, so like I need to have like a RSS feed. Like I need to know like coding in like the minorest the minorest way to like get my podcast on iTunes. So we're working on iTunes, you know, in the next week or two hopefully like we'll have our iTunes page and everything. But for right now, SoundCloud and always bougiereviews.com.
Word.
But
soon to be my Instagram as well. Like I'll have some links up there at least.
Soon to be Instagram. Right. Follow me on my Instagram at the espresso, not a X, espresso. Right. Follow that. But yeah, but what we saw the film we're gonna talk about today that we actually got to see together.
Word.
Say your Instagram name right, bro. There's a dot there.
The dot espresso. Right. Sorry. I'm so used to telling y'all that. I fucked up this time. The dot espresso. I monitor my shit very carefully. I haven't seen any like notable growth in my follower count. So y'all are fucking up.
You gotta spell that out for them, yo. That's what
the
it is.
The dot espresso, because a lot of these niggas are spelling it with an X, I guarantee you. E S P R E S S O. The espresso.
Simple enough, yeah.
Anyway, Killing of a Sacred Deer, that's the film.
Yeah.
By Yorgos Lanthimos. If you haven't heard of him, he's done
Lobster.
The Lobster, Dogtooth, I believe, was the film he did before The Lobster. I don't know if you've seen that, but that was on Netflix a little while ago. That's also, I haven't seen it, but I know of it, and thematically, like,
it's the same.
It fits into his collection, like, very much so, but. The Killing of a Sacred Deer. I don't know where to start.
I wanted to say one more thing. I'm really sorry about Bob.
It's nothing serious.
No, it is. They will all get sick and die. Bob will die. Kim will die. Your wife will die. Understand?
No, I don't.
My mom's attracted to
second
you.
Film with a bearded Colin Farrell. Yes. Or wait, it looks like, now that I like look at a clip from The Lobster, I haven't seen it in a while, it looks like he has a mustache on
his beard. Yeah, he's stashed. But he's
facial
still...
hair, Colin Farrell.
Yeah.
It's the second film. They're probably going to do another one, make it a triptych, and have an animal name in it. I swear they're going to do it. And I'll probably see that one, even though The Lobster and now The Killing of a Sacred Deer, I'm not.
You have to follow through. You have to follow through.
Yeah.
You got to see the work. As an entirety.
Yeah, maybe I need to see all three to see what
he's
saying.
To understand.
You know
what
I mean?
Maybe
the picture comes together when you have all the pieces.
Maybe,
But yeah, I don't know. What do you think?
It was... Yeah, I mean, I liked certain aspects of it. Yeah, it was one of those films very much like Mother. Like, can't hate it. You can't... It's hard to love it, but it, you know, you could like it.
Yeah.
But it's just like, yo, it is what it is. It stands alone. Like,
yeah, I think like the things like... You know, what this film has taught us, or what Yorgos has taught us, and what Aronofsky has taught us, and other directors that have made films like this, is that when the director has like a very strong voice and a very strong message, it's kind of hard to judge their film on like an entertainment factor.
Exactly. You know what I mean? Very much like what I was saying after, I feel like you have to sort of, you could read an article about it and then come back to the film and then that'll give you your barometer for like how much you appreciate it. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean?
Yeah. It's definitely not one of those films that like is made to enter, like, you know what I mean? For likability or for to just entertain the masses. It's right. not like,
you're not
butts in the seat kind of film, you know what I mean? Yeah. But and I respect, you know, those are the films I like, you know what I mean, that try and say something, try and do something different. I just don't know that I'm aligned with the style of Yorgos Lanthimos. I don't know. It's like, I'm not crazy about the deadpan. To me, like, stuff like that is not true to life. And I think that's what I like about film, is the possibility of it to be really true to life.
That's interesting that you say that, yeah.
Because that's the thing. I mean, who talks like that?
No, but some people do, but it's not interesting a whole that you, world of this people. Guy is a huge Quentin Tarantino fan. So, like, basically what is happening is Jordan's bullshitting.
Let me touch on that.
I'm having a great time making a terrific movie that people are having fun seeing. Maybe not you, but you know what, Jan? I don't think I made it for you.
Like, Quentin Tarantino delivery and dialogue of his actors, like, is actually like true to life. His storylines aren't, but like, you know, each characters have strong personalities and they talk like a whole fleshed out person, you know what I mean? Like, you believe that that's a person in the world, at least I do, you know what I mean? Because there's such details in the dialect and stuff like that, and none of them talk in the same tone, you know what I mean, and deliver everything exactly the same. His movies are so beautifully acted.
I think you suspend your disbelief more for Quentin Tarantino, understandably so.
Well, Quentin Tarantino makes you do that from the beginning of his film, whereas I feel like Yorgos Lanthimos is not exactly trying to make you suspend your disbelief. It's something that you get the sense midway through the movie that you should have been doing. That's because he sets it up in a way that you don't think you have to do that, and then midway through,
at least in this film, because in The Lobster, like said, like, from what I did see, they forcibly throw you into this world where it's like, these are the rules, this is how it goes, blah, 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 blah. Whereas The Killing, it more or less like lets you assume that everything was normal, and then in the middle somewhere was like, ha, like,
yeah,
not really. Yeah, like, yeah, yeah. You know what I mean? They hit you over the head with something else. And so in that sense, I guess. But I don't feel like Quentin Tarantino does anything that much more different in terms of, like, introducing his world. Are
we
going to talk
about Quentin Tarantino every episode? I think so far we have.
Nah, I don't think we have.
At least the last two. Not episode one. Right. That was a different kind of episode, though. But episode two and three, we talked about Tarantino. I mean, I'm fine with it.
I know that. Like,
but I don't know. Tarantino, he has a lot of other things going for his films that draw me into it. I don't know. I like his strong sense of style. I think that's the thing. I'm just not aligned with the style of Yorgos Lanthimos, because I know people that love his films.
Right.
And that have loved The Lobster and that have loved Dogtooth. But, you know, I don't know. A lot of it is the deadpan for me. And it feels like such a superficial thing to have to not be able to get over. But, you know, there's so much of it in the film. And it's not true.
I think it created, it added to the eeriness and sort of like slightly off color vibe of the whole film. Like, I think it steers you away from the actors away from overacting and taking the film too seriously, but also it doesn't allow them to do anything that
they want to do.
I mean, no, I think you still have freedom within that bound. That's like anything else. Yo, as a film actor, like, yo, your movement is very limited. Like, you know, if you go from stage to film, like, yo, stage, for the most part, as long as you're in your light, depending on like who your director is, you can chill. Like, you're a little more lax with your movements. Like, but if your shots are set and they know 35, 50, 28, like, you know, whatever, like, the frames are, like, you're sort of confined to these areas of movement. You can't do big movements in 50 mil. Like, you have to keep things tight. So there's certain restrictions that you always sort of have as an actor that are seemingly limiting to, like, other people. But I don't think that aspect of dialogue is really, like...
Well, you know, I think the dialogue is, like, it's... it basically tells me that the actors aren't going to get a chance to play around with their delivery. Like, I think one of the, while film is limiting from theater in a sense, also you have liberation in the fact of being able to try things more than once.
That's true.
It's not
true.
Live like theater is. That's so true. You know, like, all right, we're shooting this in the 50 and I don't have space here, but like when we do the wide, can I try it this way? Or, you know, can we put on a 35 after and see like if we can, you know, I can move around because it feels like
I should be doing,
because it feels like I should be doing this, and maybe that'll help me. Not every director is gonna let an actor do that.
Of course not. Hell no.
And Yorgos, it doesn't seem like Yorgos Lanthimos is that kind of director. You know what I mean?
You think his vision is no? I disagree. I think that he has to be, and that's sort of, I think he has to share his visions. That's why he works with Colin Farrell, because Colin Farrell seems to understand whatever his vision is, and it gives him the room to be creative. Yeah. So, and then when you have someone like that that you're working with, like, yo, like, he's able to then get in the driver's seat and sort of say, I think based upon what I understand of your vision being, let's do this. Very much the way we work. Like, yo, I'm not there when you're formulating everything, but like, yo, every once in a while I might say, yo, I think we should like get a shot of this, blah, blah, blah. And we'll discuss it. Like, but if it was, you know, a random cast member that we just hired recently and they started coming with crazy ideas and they don't understand the vision, it might not, you would be like, all right, like, don't ask me no questions.
Yeah. I mean, it, you know, like I'm the type of person, like I will always take what an actor is saying when it comes to their role, like about the film at large, like don't tell me anything.
Right, exactly.
But like, you know, like in terms of playing this role, like whatever you feel like you need to bring to it, like I'll listen, you know, right. What I mean? It doesn't mean we'll go with everything, but I don't know. I don't, and the thing that's interesting is Quentin Tarantino's not one of those directors that's really going to let you like experiment.
Freewheeling.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, I feel like I get the sense that he's less strict with it than Yorgos is, but at the end of the day, like, he's always like, nah, this is my dialogue and stuff like that. And
even know, down to delivery, you think he like coached?
Well, that's one of the reasons, you know, part of the reasons why he works with the actors that he works with is like, course, because they get it. Certain, and like Colin Farrell and Yorgos Lanthimos, you know what I mean? Like, maybe, you know, I guess that's what he was missing, Yorgos, Colin Farrell, you know what I mean? Like, and that's what every director is really kind of looking
for. He's putting out
a
lot more. Like, what's the space between The Lobster and his first film?
Yeah, and I think these films are damn near done at the same time.
Which, The Lobster and Killing.
Yeah.
Okay.
And
yeah.
Or like in rapid succession, you know what I mean? And then like
as
came
opposed
out
to
a year apart.
Right, okay, exactly. As opposed to the first one and the gap in between that
and
The
make,
Lobster.
You know, yeah, you know what I mean? Right. So no, I mean, I don't know. It's I'm not going to say don't go see it.
Right.
I think it is worth seeing, I guess. I want to say that.
Yo, I mean, nah. From a cinematic perspective, like, yo, his shot selection is really good. He really does a good job of, like, building tension.
Yeah.
Like, he gives you interesting shit to look at. Like, there's a lot to enjoy about this film. Mm-hmm. But if you're looking at it from a character development standpoint or a storyline standpoint, yo, you might fuck around and not like it. Like, or you might just be confused as to what the whole
point is.
Yeah. But like, if you're going for entertainment, like, he gives you the pure entertainment part in the cinematography. Like, you're going to enjoy looking at this film.
So if stuff like that entertains you, then go see it. You know what I mean? Like,
look, if you like film and you don't like what the film is shot like, yo, go listen to radio. Like, read a book. Like, that's half of the art. Like, you know what I mean? That's a large chunk of the art. Like, so,
I mean, he's a unique filmmaker, and it's definitely a unique film. So, you know, check it out if you feel so inclined this weekend or whatever.
Yeah. Check, definitely, especially so that you could better, like, catch the reference, because this is like you gotta see this movie to be tuned in. So like, you know what I mean, definitely go check it out and like, yo, tell us what your perspective is on that. Like, you know what I mean, I'm interested to see like how other people feel about this film. And I always think that's the greatest part about film is that, or films like this, that like they're not so direct. Like, they leave room for conversation. So one person's interpretation might clear up all of your confusion. Like, one inkling of information, like, you mm-hmm. know what I mean, might clear up so much confusion about whatever it is that you don't understand of this film. And, like, you know what I mean? It'll make you appreciate it better. Like, you know, Pulp Fiction took me a while to really appreciate. Like, everybody was like, yo, watch this film, watch this film, when I watched film from a very, like, actor-based perspective. So I hated the fact that everything was, like, willy-nilly and over the top. I was like, yo, this shit sucks. I was just watching 30s films. Like, you know what I mean? Like, my perspective was different. But, yo, learning to love the cinematography and, like, you know, the way things are shot, I really, like, second and third time watching Pulp Fiction, appreciated it. And when I was, like, able to loosen up and let go of, like, how, like, anal I was about dialogue, like, yo, I was like, yo, this is a good film. Like, I don't, it doesn't have to be based in, like, the realest of realities. Like, the whole point of a film is, like, suspend your disbelief. Like, so I'd say go see it.
Nah, go see it. You know what I mean? If anything, just, to, you know, it's a film with a lot of nuance in it, and it has, like, a strong voice behind it. So go see it. I don't think, you know.
You don't.
If you don't like it, you saw something different. And what's wrong with that?
It's just a concept.
Yeah. Tosh, what did you think about it?
About what? About what Yorgos was saying?
Well, yeah, and about, you know, like, the film in general. Because Tosh really liked Lobster. And I think, like,
well, I thought it was, I like.
I think you might have been more excited to see the film than even I was.
Yeah, I was. I was definitely really excited to see Killing of a Sacred Deer. I liked The Lobster a lot, but I feel like it was one of those things where I understood the concept he was going for. I understood maybe what he was trying to, like, or the emotion that he was putting into the film at the time that I saw it. I was feeling that emotion to some extent. And so I could go with the weirdness. This one was a little different, Killing of a Sacred Deer. It was good. Mm-hmm. It was interesting. It was definitely not really... it didn't make much sense to me on the first go around. Like, I had to talk to you guys about it a lot to make sense of it. But now that I'm seeing or hearing Yorgos talk about it, you can tell that the way he speaks is not really linear. So there's no way that his thought process, like, it seems like his thoughts in his head are muddled and he's mm-hmm. trying to get them out. And it definitely reflects on the way that his film is, you know, like,
yeah,
on both of the ones. I want to see Dogtooth to see if it, like you said, fits thematically, but...
I think I just heard the story about it, and I was like, it definitely fits thematically. So it's about these two siblings that are, like, have never left the house in their own in their whole life. So they kind of create their own world and their own language, and their parents even lie to them about what certain words mean. Mm-hmm. So they really have no sense of, like, for example, it'd be like, oh, like, at dinner, it'd be like, could you pass me the airplane? When they're talking about salt, the salt shaker. So, like, yeah. It's really just about these two siblings that have, like, this warped perception of reality because they've never left the house, and their parents have, like, fabricated the whole world that they know.
So that's... It was a dummy version or a fledgling version of what he did in the last two films, where it's like, I'm going to have these two little kids who live in a world that is made up, mm-hmm. and now I'm going to, like... It seems like he just put adults into yeah. these made up worlds now as those kids.
You know? Yeah. I always get the sense that he's trying to say something about human nature in each of his films. And, you know, he's the kind of director who's like, you're with it or you're not with it. You may go see this movie, and I suggest you do. You may not like it, you may fucking love it. It seems like that's the kind of director he is.
Yes, yeah, it's very much a take it or leave it sort of perspective that he makes his films with. But yeah. That's maybe what some people like, you know what I mean? Like,
by the way, thanks, Tosh. Adam is back now. Word. Just in case anybody was like, wait. yeah, and I also saw, you know, to move on, I saw The Florida Project.
Yeah. I got a videotape of the kids illegally entering the utility room.
Don't act guilty, okay? Hey, Scotty. Did you hear what I just said?
I got it. I'm going to talk to her.
Happens again, you're out of here. It's only second week of the summer and there's already been a dead fish in the pool.
We were doing an experiment. We were trying to get it back alive. That was my idea.
And water balloons thrown at tourists? You can't fuck with tourists.
They didn't tip us.
Are you serious?
No.
Oh my God, this is unacceptable. I failed as a mother, Mooney. You've disgraced me.
Harley. Yeah, Mom, you're disgraced.
Yo.
Florida Project.
Sean
Sean Baker. I really, really like that movie.
That shit, like, yo.
I really like it. It was one of the best movies I feel like I've seen this year.
I feel like movies don't get made in, like, the way he shot it, it felt like, you know, those sort of casual, real to, like, true to life movies without, like, because I think the last movie that was sort of this vein that I remember watching is, like, Moonlight. Mm-hmm. But Moonlight had some very, like, cinematic moments. Mm-hmm. Whereas, like, this is, like, real gritty, sort of, like, true to life, natural story. But it's still very beautifully shot.
And I think it's funny because, for those of you that don't know, Sean Baker did The Florida Project. And his first film that he did
was Tangerine.
That also had a very gritty and true to life feel. But he shot it with an iPhone. So I think, sort of in its visuals, it was gonna be gritty and true to life.
Yeah.
But like, his characters are just so real and fleshed out. He blurs the line between like performance and like nothing you see in his films feels like a performance,
right?
To any extent, it feels like you said, very true to life. And I think it's interesting that he was still able to do this with The Florida Project, even though it's a film that's beautifully shot. It's not shot on an iPhone, you know what I mean? He has a lot more in his arsenal now. Yeah. But still, like, you know, it's not about what you're using. It's about, can you create the vibe that you want to create? And he does that with the acting, and he does that with the way he tells the story. And, like, it was just such a good movie. I don't know. And it's one of those movies that it's all through the perspective of the kids.
Right.
So it's very cute, and it's very funny. But there's, like, a lot of darkness happening that's not directly in their world and in their line of sight.
Right.
And as the audience member, you know it, but, you know.
But he brings all of that through
the kids. Through the kids. You know what I mean?
But, I mean, the darker things are sort of brought through by William Dafoe's character.
Not even that. No, it's more brought through the kids' parents and stuff like that. William Dafoe's character is actually, like, I think in the trailers they definitely sell him more than he does in the film.
Okay.
I mean, you know, he definitely has a big role, but he's like kind of the voice of reason, you know what I mean? And this, like, he's the manager of the hotel, and he feels for a lot of the tenants and what they're going through, but at the end of the day, like,
but he strings the story together, like, because he's the bridge between, seemingly so, I haven't seen it. He's the bridge between the kids and the parents.
I think he just has to deal with the sort of messes that the kids make in and around his hotel, and has to, like, call the parents' attention to that. Yeah,
right. But in that, like, he gets a step into the kids' world, and then you can see that through like his interactions with them, but the shift in perspective, like, if it is based starting from the kids' perspective, you can easily move into, like, what's happening with William Dafoe because he has a relationship to the kids. And then through that, what's happening with him is what's happening with him and the parents. Mm-hmm. And so you also get perspective into their, like, interactions still sort of through William Dafoe. So he's, like, the middleman, like, for the film in a sense where you can get around to everybody sort of using this character, you know what I mean?
But, and I think it's dope because he's like, I don't want to spoil too much about the plot for anyone, but, like, you know, as it's all through the kids' perspective. So, like, you, like, as, like, serious things start to happen with the adults in the film, like, you don't really see it, but you start to see
the kid
in the bath a lot more,
like
taking a bath. And he's like, oh, okay. Like, we've seen, like, three shots of her playing with her toys in the bath. Like, seems like, you know, it's just weird. And then you find out later there are things going on while she's taking a bath. You know what I mean? Like, okay. But it's like, that's never how it's.
But you'll see almost as if it's like a time lapse of her in the bath.
No, it's not even a time. It's just like scene of her playing with her toys in the bath. All right. Then we have some other things happening a few scenes later. Another scene of her playing with her toys in the bath. It's a different day or whatever. Then, you know, the story goes on a little while later. Another, you know what I mean? It's like something that wasn't prevalent.
It was like, why the fuck does this shot matter? And then it's like, oh, all those times her mom was doing blow. You know, something like that.
And yeah, and it's just like, he's definitely like a strong sense of direction and how he wants the stories to be told and who he wants to tell the stories through. And like, the acting in this movie is so good. I swear this little girl, what's her name? I think her name is Brooklyn Prince.
That's wild. Yeah. That's all. That's that throws you off because it's a little girl, but like.
Yeah, like her name was Brooklyn. I swear she's going to get a nomination for an award. Yeah.
Really?
Yo, she was so good in this movie. It almost, you know, makes you forget how good the mom was in this movie as well. You know what I mean? Like, and then Willem Dafoe in a way that you've really never been able to see him before. You know what I mean?
Like, he was very much like typecast.
A normal. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, he's always like plotting something or doing something sinister. Like,
you've never seen him with a heart.
Yeah, like, yeah. He's just like a human. He's just like a human in this movie. Yeah. And I think that I was reading somewhere where they said, like, what Willem Dafoe gets to do in this movie is what has made all of his roles great. Like, even when he plays these menacing people and these villains, like, he always brings like a sense of like humanity to his to roles. Them. And he's just able to do that full on in this film.
It's, yo, because it was really well done. Like, on a weird note, like, yo, I liked him in Spider-Man as what, Hobgoblin?
The Green Goblin.
The Green Goblin. No, he wasn't.
No, he was the Green Goblin.
Oh, right, because, yeah. Okay, right.
Harry was later.
Yeah, exactly. So, I liked him as Green Goblin because of that. Like, yo, he makes you feel for him.
I mean, that line at the end, like, don't tell Harry.
Yo, like, yo.
That's such a, like, ah, like, he was the villain the whole movie, and then you're like, shit, like.
He's still a guy.
He just wanted his son. Do you know what I mean?
Yo, like, he does good. A good job, yo.
No, that was beautiful.
He's an underrated, I think in some senses, he's underrated because he's been so typed or so, like. Yeah. Cast in this like character actor light, but like, yo, he got chops, man. Yeah,
no, one of the folks great in the film. So, all right, so that was a Flower Project. Definitely go see that. That's a movie that like you probably gonna like it. You know what I mean? Like, if you don't like it, then we could talk because I really don't understand. But definitely go see the Florida Project.
It's definitely beautifully. Is it about like the water situation?
Nah, it's about like these families or these people that live in. Motel, like basically permanently live
right
in a hotel,
yeah,
and like in the shadow of Disney World, you know what I mean? So, like, Disney World is close by, but in the film, it kind of represents this thing that they'll never be able to achieve, represents like a reality right that's so foreign to them.
It's like right the there. Castle and like,
yeah,
the peasants' little village,
yeah,
is, like, right
and it is
there.
Like a shadow, yeah, it is like a shadow over the,
yeah,
over you know, their community. It's so well done, definitely go see that. Only thing that kind of annoyed me, me and my girlfriend went to see it at the Alamo Draft House, and like that's the theater, you know, they have a full menu, you can get food, drinks, whatever, but they're super strict about like when you go to the theater. So if you get to the theater like after the trailers end and the movie starts, like you can't go into the theater anymore.
Damn.
So we got there was like one or two trailers left. We had put in a food order, and then I had like my receipt for my ticket like sitting like on the table, and then some dude picked it up and thought it was a food order, but I was like, nah, we've already made an order. And then he was like, oh, have you guys ever been here before? And I was like, yeah. And he was like, well, you're not supposed to come in after the trailers start. You guys came in after the trailers ended, like you're not supposed to come in after that, like they shouldn't have let you in here. I was like, nah, we didn't get here before. I was like, nah, we got here before the movie started. And he was like, I don't know what he said, but he just walked away. Like he said something weird. And I was like, hell? Like, what's your problem?
Because he saw your movie ticket?
I don't know if he made a mistake. Like, he felt weird that he made a mistake and thought my movie ticket was an order card. But he was just like,
I don't understand how any of that leads to.
It was just so random. Like, we sat down, trailers were on, we filled out our order cards, put them in. Somebody came and took them, or took our order, and then. So the movie is kind of started. I just have my receipt laying out on the table. Our food hasn't come yet. And then this is a different guy than who took our initial order. He comes by, he sees the receipt, and I'm like, that's just the receipt. That's not the order card. And then he's talking about how he came after the movie started, and like they shouldn't have let us in. I'm like, if we came after the movie start,
we wouldn't be here.
You know what I mean? Like, we definitely came.
Come on, Alamo.
That kind of, yo, I swear to God, that took me out of the movie for like, at least 15 minutes, bro.
Right? Because you got to just steam about
that. Yeah, I was like, yo, why would he really say some shit like that?
Yo. That's the one thing about Alamo that, like, I don't like that they come and ask you shit. Like, I mean, I guess they got
to
ask you
your order. They do their best
to
make it as
seamless.
Yeah, and as non-distracting as possible.
But sometimes it's still...
But I was like, yo, you just went out of your way to distract me. You know what I mean?
Like, and that's, it doesn't only distract you, yo. It's like other people around you. Like, yeah. Yo, they might hear or feel all that tension. They're like, yo, what the fuck?
Like, and it's like, what are you about to do? Are you about to... like escort me out? Yeah, like if we did. So, you know what I mean? Like...
either y'all, your person didn't do their job, yeah. Or like, because there's no way initially they
barge in. Yeah, exactly. And they did do their job because we were definitely
within bounds.
Within, yeah, yeah, like within the allotted time. So
that's crazy.
Fuck that guy for that. But yeah, I don't know what else is there to fucking get into.
I mean, we really gotta put out some shit for Adam.
For Adam,
we've been slacking on that.
Yeah, listen. It's hard to do. I have a lot of respect for like sequel writers and stuff like that. It's hard to put together a continuation of a story. You know,
is it the pressure?
I guess in a sense it's the pressure. You know what I mean? Like because it is familiar to people now, and there are so many things we could do. But I feel like, you know, first draft is basically done of Adam. To a certain extent, the first draft is finished. It's really just about getting that second draft done. But you will see Adam. Part two, you know, you'll see it soon.
And that's interesting that you say that. Like, yo, I feel like episode two is like, yo, more room for like expansion. Like, I'm more excited for episode two. Like, whereas you're saying like, yo, the expectation goes up.
I mean, I'm excited as hell. You know what I mean? Right. But it's just about trying not to let, you know, I don't want excitement to ruin anything.
You don't
want to
drop the ball.
Yeah, you know what I mean? I don't want to do something bad because I was excited and I felt like, fuck it, let's do this. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, I really want to think about what makes sense. Okay. Like, I was watching, like, season two of Stranger Things drop. Like, if you haven't seen that, go watch that ASAP. I was like, I had never been so impressed by season two of a show. Really? You know what I mean? Because season one was so damn good. I was like, you know, we'll see what they can do for season two. Like, I don't know how they'll follow up. And in the like first half of the first few episodes of season two, I was like, all right, like it's no season one, but all right. By the end of season two, I was like, damn. Like, I was like applauding the Duffer Brothers. And like, that's kind of how I felt in season one of the show too. Like the first few episodes, I was like, I want to see what happens, but it's not that, you know, it's not that great. It's not
crazy, yeah.
By the end of season one, I had totally bought into their storytelling, into their world. And they did the same thing with season two, and I was so impressed.
That's interesting, because I don't think I got past one. Like, I haven't checked out Stranger Things. I tried. Like, me and my girlfriend tried. We were watching it, and then, like, yo, I fell off, and she kept going. And yeah. She finished it, and she's like, yo, it's great. You got to watch it. But I'm like, I don't know. Like, it's not one of those ones that's on my list right now. I think you will definitely enjoy it.
They have a beat. Like, I think you have to, like, after a while, you have to basically get in their beat.
Right.
They have a beat that they're going by, and they definitely know how to create suspenseful situations. A lot of it is, like, meanwhile, back at the barn. Right. Back at the ranch. Yeah. You know what I mean? I can tell. And they build that up until it's like, yo, like, what is going on?
They have that classic storytelling vibe, like, you know what I mean? Twin Peaks-esque.
Yeah, and they have a good range of characters that are different. And they do a good job of sort of making you care about them. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? A lot of the times they present you with a character who's like an asshole for like four or five episodes and you hate them. And then they do one thing that makes you, like, empathize with them. Right, you know what I mean? Like, it's...
Is it always an action, or is it sometimes it's a reveal?
No, I think it's in character development. I think a lot of the times you just learn more about this character.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Like, say, you got one kid, he's a dick, and he's always saying some dickish shit, and then five episodes later, you find out, like, his dad rapes him. Or his dad is an asshole.
Or
something. I mean? Yeah, like, and it's like, oh, that makes sense. I get it now. I'm sad. Mm-hmm. Like, you know?
And then you kind of start to see how... I think they all get thrown into situations that are bigger than themselves.
Right.
And kind of forces them to not be so, you know, certain characters at least, to be not petty. You know what I mean? Right. Like, all right, when we all have to fight fucking sci-fi monsters, like, why am I going to be tight at you about, you know, why am I going to think that I have a higher social status than you something like that? Because these are like kids to a certain extent. Right. So I think, like, you know, the main cast are like, probably middle schoolers, like probably in like 8th grade or 7th grade. Right. And then, you know, they have like the cast of like teens and stuff like that.
And then the adults
who are by far, you know,
the least?
there are only a few adults that are important.
Okay.
And I think it's interesting because the adults that are important are the ones that really give anything that the kids have to say any credence. You know what I mean? Like, I don't want to say the supportive adults, but they're definitely, like, those parents in the show that are just, like, parents that couldn't be, that are just aren't interested. You know what I mean? Yeah, and they probably, you get the sense that they wouldn't even believe that the kids are going through what they are going through if they were to tell them.
Right.
But then the adults in the show that matter are the ones
that sort of champion their cause.
Yeah, yeah, and that have put the kids on basically on a similar level of respect when it comes to life or death situations. Right. You know what I mean? Like, they're the, I want to say, supportive adults, right. I guess.
Gotcha.
And it's well done because they're thrown into those situations with them. So it's like, all right, I see where you're coming from. But not like, I forgot how we were talking about Stranger Things.
Nah, I mean, because
we were talking about following up.
Yeah, exactly.
On episode 2. So it's like, you know, I'm trying to take a lot of P's and Q's from the Duffer Brothers. Apparently Netflix had them in the writer's room before they...
did Stranger Things?
Nah, before they approved them for a second season. They had them in their writer's room just to, like, sort of start thinking and getting the ball rolling. And they wanted to give them the opportunity to write without any fan service, you know, to know what the fans would say or anything like that.
That's what's up. That's really great, because that forged your vision without... Yo,
like, and that was something I didn't even think about too much. I was like, oh, that was actually a very good idea that they had them. And I think that I'm thinking that maybe some of the things I thought were, like, there wasn't a lot of fan service.
Right.
I don't think there was much of any, but it was just interesting to know that a lot of those moments that I found really cool because I was a fan of the show wasn't, you know, something that they were giving to me.
Exactly.
It was something that it's just like more of these guys doing their thing. That's why I liked it in the first place.
Right.
So that was cool. And, you know, I think, you know, a lot of it, the struggles with Adam in episode 2, is the fact that I don't want to get caught up in saying, oh, this would be cool.
Right.
You know what I mean?
It's, you want to forward the story and the vision.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And, like, how can we do this so that when episode 2 comes out, you won't have to wait as long for episode 3? You know
what I
mean?
That's what I really want to get to. Like, where these next four, I mean, the first of all, the dropping of 1 took so long, but no one knew about it, so that's no pressure.
Yeah.
But the gap in between 1 and 2 is starting to, like, eat at me. And so I'm like, I want 2, 3, and 4 to be in rapid succession of each other. Like, you know, they just have to go boom, boom, boom. You know what I mean?
Yeah. I would love to do, like, 1 a month, you know, afterward. You know what I mean? That would be great. I think a month in between is great, too. Also, like, for episode 1, like, that premiere was dope. So, definitely, I'm looking forward to a season episode
2 premiere. I'll actually be here.
That'll be great. At the premiere.
That would be dope. And I could actually maybe take some, like, pictures of, like, yo, just, like, everybody that shows up. And please, yo, like, I think we should try to, you know, maybe we could use somebody's space and make it a little more, like, intimate. Relaxed. People could, you know.
I did love the setup at.
You like the space?
Yeah, I did like the setup at, where was it? Why am I blanking? Videography.
Right, yeah.
I liked how they set it up because it's like, it is a private area. Once you're in it, you really do feel like it's yours and the bar is, like, separated off. But yeah, like, it'd be nice to have more than an hour, I guess.
Yeah.
Like, I would love to show episode 1 and then episode 2. At the premiere, and then keep doing that for all of the like, live screenings.
Exactly.
And I think we could do that at Videography. It's just, like, about getting maybe an hour and a half, 2-hour slot, which is more money. But,
right.
You know, whatever. But yeah, nah, don't worry, guys. Episode 2 is coming. If you haven't seen episode 2, watch episode 1.
For real,
BougieReviews.com. Go find Adam on there.
It'll be, I think you'll like it.
You mess with it. And I feel like if you fuck with the vision,
then
you'll be on board.
Yeah,
you know what I mean, for episode 2. So it's coming very soon.
I haven't got any negative feedback, though. I think everybody likes the shit.
I haven't gotten any feedback that I would call negative. Like, I've gotten the feedback I like, which is, like, positive to positive criticism.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I was like, I've definitely got some critiques. Yeah. Like, you know what I mean? But they're not, like, I've only had one person be like, you're making another one. But, like, this guy is always like that. Like, he's like that about everything. Like, but
first of all, I say that every day when I see the fucking movies that are coming out.
Yeah, right? Another one?
Like, for real. Yeah. Well, at least we'll give you another or something good. Like,
yeah. And, like, yo, I think people, like, my whole shit was like, yo, people ask for it. Like, I had a lot of people like, yo, when's the next one? Like, yo, and I'm like, damn, who said there was a next one? Like, yo, like, even though we had planned for that, but like, yo, some people would have been like, that's great, no one cares. But yeah. Like, yo, like community feedback, like if that's as far as that goes, like I'm happy. Like it's cool to me to have work out that, yo, people in my community can see and like vibe with, you know what I mean?
So. Yo, so apparently Twilight Zone reboot from Jordan Peele is in the works for CBS All Access.
Wow.
Which is their like new streaming service that they're doing.
Twilight Zone?
CBS All Access is the streaming service. But yeah, a Twilight Zone reboot.
With?
By Jordan Peele.
He's the like writer
for like, the lead on it, yeah.
Or as an actor?
What the no, fuck? Like.
As a writer, as, yeah.
As writer, as a Helmer. Okay. Yes.
Wow, that's.
And I would love to see him like as what was Ronald Sterling?
Yeah.
I would love to see him as that character in the beginning, like yeah, Rod Sterling. Sorry, like
that just to come in and Twilight, like exactly, yeah. Like,
dude, I'll this will be the third time, no, the second time trying to bring back Twilight.
Yeah, exactly. No, yeah,
because they had the version with Forest Whitaker. Yeah, and then there'll be this one. I only saw like one episode of the remake. It didn't really.
I like the older stuff.
The old Twilight Zone, you can't beat that.
It's up there with Hitchcock Presents. Like, yo, that shit.
Which is another golden, show I've like, never really been able to check out. Yeah, I know it was. Wasn't it on Netflix for a while?
Yeah, it definitely was. But Hitchcock Presents, man, like, yo, it's exactly like the Twilight Zone. It's just these little vignettes.
Yeah.
Of like madness, yeah. Like yeah, you know, like he and you really get to. I think what was cool about those is they really played with like cinematography a lot. Mm-hmm. Like you know what I mean? They would create worlds, but then they would like send you weird places and like concepts. Like ugh, that's all they played with. Like they would just take concepts, throw you in a world, and run with it. And like it was almost Axiom based, which is like stuff I love. Like I would love to have some series like that where it's just like. You know what I mean? Little vignettes of different ideas.
I mean, that's almost what Adam is to a certain extent. But, yo, you know, in terms of vignettes of life.
Right.
But now I love, you know, I love Jordan Peele's trajectory, man. Like,
he's making moves.
Yeah. He's making moves. Like, all right, you go from Get Out, that's your first feature. Like, to be able to say Get Out's your first feature, like, wow, all right. Your right, trajectory is going, you're going up.
Right.
But, like, he's making smart moves. He didn't take the Akira movie, even though they really wanted him for that. Like really? He didn't take that track
as a director.
Yeah.
Wow.
Because they felt like he could do it cheap, basically. Mm. But so he didn't take that. He was like, "Nah, I'm not gonna do that."
Did he know anything about it? Any investment in it?
Nothing? I think he knew of Akira, and I think that
because that's taking a like a resurgence. It's getting repopularized. Yeah. I guess off the strength
Supreme just did a collab.
Yeah, exactly. Which
it has some dope shit in there.
Yo, and I think it's just this whole like sci-fi-esque feel. Even and though it anime, doesn't have,
I think with Ghost in the Shell.
Yeah,
even for what and that movie Death was.
Note, mm-hmm. Yeah,
and Death Note. Yeah,
even though Akira's not really sci-fi, it has like a techie feel, like, you know what I mean?
That's a dystopian feel. I feel like if you can make a Blade Runner reboot, like,
exactly, remake,
it's time for the Akira movie.
Exactly. But, I mean, they'd have to slam that shit out the park, because that's, like, that's a classic. Like,
they already, I mean, Jordan Peele's not doing it, but he's going to do this Black Klansman movie.
Okay.
He's producing it, Spike Lee is directing, and it's based on a real, like, African-American, a black cop's, sort of went undercover into the KKK, mainly. And apparently, he became like the head of like one of their chapters, someplace.
Was he like passing?
Nah. So he was like, he basically got in through the internet and like phone and stuff like that. And whenever it came to in person shit, he sent a white cop. So it was like the weirdest thing.
He had like he had an agent.
Yeah, like, he basically he had like a. Someone that went out in the field for him, but he was the one that was doing all the corresponding. Wow, and so he was in charge of it.
That's fucking wild. And then the dude, I guess, was like strapped up, like so that he had the documentation of like.
Yeah, you know what I mean? Yeah, I guess that's what it was.
That's interesting.
So it's called Black Klansman. That's the movie. And Jordan Peele's producing, Spike Lee's directing. Is written by two white guys. I forget their names, but you know.
That's what
I feel like that's like a movie, Jordan. Coaster.
That, yeah, it has. It has like that suspenseful comedy because
I want to see what comedic. Spike Lee does with it.
That's true. I'm actually, very interested to see how it's not Jordan Peele's direction.
Nah, it's just Spike Lee's. It's just he's producing, and I think you know maybe he has a hand in the writing, but Spike Lee will direct.
But I think he's also doing this Lion King reboot thing.
I don't think he's in on that. The cast for that shit came out. It's
loaded, yo. Yeah, it's everybody's right, loaded. In that. Fucking.
I'm glad they got
Eric Andre is on this shit, but okay, that's what's up.
Because you can't replace that voice.
Yeah, that's true.
So it doesn't matter who you get.
They're doing a cartoon reboot.
So here's the thing. It's like, all right, I get what you mean when you say live action, but it's not live action.
What is it, like a Scanner Darkly?
It's like the Jungle Book. It's gonna be like that.
That's live action.
It's not live action.
What is that?
Because
that's
look,
CGI.
That's not that live is, action. The CGI. Only real person in the Jungle Book, the only real thing was Mowgli.
I see what you mean. Simply because there is no.
There's no human in the Lion King. That's a human
thing. So like, that's what I'm saying. Like, it's not live action.
Even
animation.
This animation. Like, you can't call that a live action remake.
Because there's nothing.
That's
just like live.
That's
OD anime. That's a style of animation.
Like even in the Jungle Book, like literally, like every backdrop is a green screen. Like,
right. Yeah. You know what I mean? 100%, yeah. Mowgli, and it's going to be the same thing for
The Lion King. Of course. Except there's no human character to put in, so it literally is going to be all animated. So it's not live action. Also, Jon Favreau is also doing The Lion King, too. He did the Jungle Book. Yeah, I guess he's Disney's
guy. He's doing another one? A different
one? No. He's doing this one. The remake.
But that was the guy that did The Jungle Book.
Yeah.
Okay.
So I think Disney trusts him to do projects like this after,
he created a great world for The Jungle Book, and I didn't see The Jungle Book movie so I don't know if it correlated.
Yeah,
like, because there's certain, like, you can't get Pride Rock wrong.
Yeah,
you know what I mean. Yeah. So there's definitely things since, like, scenically, if that's a word,
visually
that you have to get correct. And I think even more so than in Jungle Book, in Lion King, you have to get those correct.
It's in people's heads.
Exactly. Like, everybody knows what the fall looks like. Yeah, you know what I mean? Like, Mufasa's fall looks a certain kind
of way. That's the thing. It's like, are they going to do that shot for shot?
Are they
going to have the above, like...
I mean, certain classic shots, you have to, I feel. Yeah. But I think everything else and the movement through the worlds, like the movement through those spaces...
Yeah.
Can be, like, you can do whatever the fuck you want, but you have to get, like, Pride Rock, and then also wherever, like, that field area that they go and look at Mufasa and shit, like, you gotta get those shots right. You can't fuck around with a lot of that. But, like, all the other framework, you can run around. Like, you can do shit.
Yeah. You know? I mean, like, I'm torn. I don't know. Like, I like the cast. I think... their casting makes sense, besides maybe Beyonce as Nala. I think that's...
Damn, I gotta look at this shit again, because I just saw the lineup on
Beyonce
Instagram.
Beyonce as Nala. And, like, I think literally... that makes sense and it doesn't. It makes sense to cast Beyonce as Nala for dollar signs, not for someone's voice acting ability. Like, if anything, Beyonce has shown us that her acting range is very limited.
But hold on. I mean, first of all, that was years ago, right? And you gotta take into account...
I think it's interesting that she stopped trying.
You gotta take into account... that this is also a musical.
It is.
So it's like...
But it's not like Beyonce is the only good singer that could also play Nala.
You
could have got Janelle Monáe. That was
Janelle
awesome.
That's what I'm thinking.
You could have got... there's a lot of other black women you could have got.
Matthew Broderick is Simba?
No, in the original, Matthew Broderick was Simba.
Oh, I was about to say, what the fuck?
I was trying to get the...
Really? I didn't know that. That's interesting. Yeah. Wow. Because I was like, the only person that looks correct on that is Earl Jones. Well, I think I got it on my...
Yeah, and then Seth Rogen is playing Pumbaa.
Okay.
Childish Gambino. Donald Glover is playing Simba, obviously. I forgot.
I was going to say, seems like...
I thought John Oliver as Zazu, I also thought was, like, spot on.
John Oliver as Zazu?
Yeah.
So who is Eric Andre?
Azizi.
Okay.
I think that's one of
the hyenas.
Yeah. Which also makes sense. Keegan-Michael Key is Kamari. I forget who Kamari is.
Yeah, I'm not even sure. I haven't seen that shit in so long. Like.
Yeah. Chiwetel Elijah for a scar should be also pretty good.
Who? Oh, he's going to... I mean, you could have went with him or Idris Elba, but either of them.
He already... See, like,
but
you
I
got...
Know,
he
you,
already
yeah,
did... What's
exactly.
his name from
but,
Jungle Book?
Hey, why not? Like...
And wasn't Lupita Nyong'o somewhere?
I think so. Yeah, that's what
I
I'm saying.
Not.
I'm looking for this.
Nah,
Instagram.
I don't think Lupita's in that.
For real?
I guess, because this is the full cast. This is the shit that's been going around.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, I mean, I almost wish that they just would reboot, like remaster The Lion King. But right, they have done that.
Yeah.
And I saw that, like, when they did it in 3D.
Nah, a few years excited. I'm excited for this, yo. I like these sort of, like, realistic. But
here's what sucks is because this is going to be Lion King for a new generation. This is going to be their Lion King.
And it's going to be, like, the voices of. Are like we know all these people.
Yeah,
like, that's dope. Yeah, I think that's great.
Oh, but original is look. For those of you that don't know, The Lion King was the first movie I had ever seen. I was like literally, I couldn't have been more than 8 months old, and my mom took me to the theater to see Lion King.
What the fuck?
I don't know why she took me to the theater, but thank God she did because I think that's a big moment for me. Yeah. Even though I have no personal recollection of it, I think that set the tone. But The Lion King is a movie that holds a lot of weight with me. I've seen it on Broadway, right. I think, like, 3 times.
Shit.
I've seen the movie so many times. The first movie I've seen, like, I don't know that I'm comfortable with.
But you've seen it on Lion Broadway.
King. Listen, I work with kids, and I've seen what happens when, like, the Cinderella movie comes out. Or, I mean? Like, that's, I remember.
Pandemonium.
I remember one student told me, like, I think she was a fourth grader. And she was like, yeah, like, I saw Cinderella. It was really good. Apparently, there was another Cinderella a long time ago, but I never. You know what I mean? Like, I'm just like, damn. Like,
is that
what
it's gonna be with The Lion King? Dated, yo.
But I just feel like that is The Lion King that will. That is The Lion King.
Yo, that you're. See, you gotta nah. You gotta get with it, yo. Because, you sound like.
I know. I sound like an old head.
Yo, I bet you when Great Gatsby was coming out, it was like this. This is not Robert Redford. Like, who the fuck is this guy? Like that's not really Great Gatsby. Yo, and that happens to every new thing. Like, you're skeptical. You have a bias and a predisposition. But is this
gonna have as much heart as the original Lion King did, though?
I mean,
you know what I mean when I say that heart.
Somebody would have been like, yo, that's Macbeth.
Yeah, no, but that's not the problem. A lot of things are Shakespearean, but it's like, is this going to have the same, you know what I mean? Like poetry, feel, you know what I mean? Is it going to be like 2049 was to Blade Runner, like a perfect version of the movie, okay. But it misses all the nuance and the poetry, you know what I mean?
Is it going to miss the depth? And get all the cinematography. And
just the emotion, you know what I mean? Like,
I get it. Like,
I don't know. Computer generation is like, it's perfect, yes. And I was watching The Jungle Book, and I thought it was a good movie. But the fact that everything was fake disturbed me throughout the entire movie. Like, it stopped me at some points from getting into it. And I was like, this movie is fine. It's good. But, like, I just feel so weird that, like, none of this stuff was captured on a camera. You know what I mean?
I see what you're saying.
It's created in a computer, and there's one real person, and he's running, and it looks dope, but he's not even really moving. You know what I mean? He's not really going anywhere, and that kept disturbing me throughout The Jungle Book. And now with The Lion King, it's like you're even taking away the element of a human. Now it's just all computers. You know what I mean? Is there a camera involved in making this movie at all?
I think that's what's bothering you. You're seeing the depletion of your necessity in this.
because it's like, all right, it may be a great movie, but
it was made in Vectorworks. So
yeah, like of course it's great. Like it's so well shot.
It's mathematically sound. Like you know what I mean? Like the golden ratio was up on the fucking screen the whole time. Like,
and it's like I don't know. And then we get the voices, and I think the cast is well done, but I think, I don't know. It feels like we're in a... And look, I was so young when The Lion King came out. I don't know what, if people thought it was artistic or if it was
deep, or if it was just like
another children's movie that came out at the time, and now it's like our generation shit. You know what I mean?
That's how I feel.
That's probably what it was, but this Lion King feels very... production line conveyor belt.
It's a commerce move.
It's commerce. It's designed to be successful.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean? And I think this is something that Disney's gonna do with all their properties.
Right.
Aladdin one is already casted.
They're blowing out. See, I was gonna say I kind of understand because if they touched Aladdin, I would be bothered. Especially
the Aladdin one is is already happening.
Especially with Robin Williams dead. Oh, get the fuck out of here, yo. Nah.
Will Smith is, yes, doesn't that make you
Disney,
mad?
Disney, like, we gotta talk, all right? We gotta talk.
We just weren't hitting the right movie for Adam. Now he sees what I'm talking about.
Yo.
But we'll see, you know what I mean? I guess we'll have to wait for the trailer. I don't know.
But, yeah, I think we could cut it there.
This is episode 4. We talked about a lot today. We talked about Hollywood's sexual abuse and harassment problem.
Sadly.
And what are we doing to make sure this doesn't happen again? Let's make sure we're not just like... This shouldn't be like just limited to a hashtag or a Twitter revolution. Like, can we actually make sure that there are steps being done so that this doesn't happen anymore?
Yeah, exactly. Like, put the clamps down on the industry a little bit, you know, and just get them to toe the line a little bit.
Yeah, make something of this moment you got happening right now. Talk about that. Talked about Killing of a Sacred Deer. Go see it.
Check it out. Tell us what you think.
Write to us in some way, SoundCloud, whatever. Comment. Let us know how you felt about it. Yeah. I'm interested.
Send something in the bougiebrews.com. Like, let's get that open.
If you say something that makes me think, maybe come on here and talk about it.
All right, sit down. Pull up a chair.
Florida Project, go see that.
Yes, please. I'm seeing that tonight, most likely.
Oh, yeah. All right.
Yeah, why not?
Thor. We'll probably have Thor to talk about next week. I am Jordan Campbell of Bougie Reviews, also known as The Espresso on Instagram. The.espresso. Spell espresso right when you try to look for me. This is a bougie podcast, bougie chat,
right?
A bougie cast pod. What do you want to call it? I don't know. Hit us up. Let us, give us some ideas.
Yes.
A bougie sit down. I don't know.
Right?
I'm throwing things out there right now.
Let us know what we are. Like, you tell us.
Enjoy it. Go see some good movies over the weekend. And we'll
check
be back
next week.
Yo, we'll be back for more like a week. We can change. Right. I don't know. Niggas are busy sometimes. So peace out.
Later, y'all.
Goodbye.